Okay, Ayin Dalet Omud Aleph. I don't remember exactly where we left off. The people listening along to the archives that are binge listening, and all the shiurim are back to back, will not be aware of the fact that we've had a multi-week break here, as people got distracted with the summer. So you probably just finished listening to the last shiur, and you couldn't wait, so you moved on immediately to the next shiur. But we've been a few weeks, so if we're a little rusty, it's probably fresher in your mind, gentle listener, wherever and whenever you are. So the mission here in Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, unless everybody remembers it.
Of course.
You were in Chutz Laretz? Mm-hmm. Oh, so then you have an excuse.
Well, but I only take vacation when there's no shiur.
No, but in other words, the Chutz Laretz makes you forget the Torah that you learn.
I thought actually it was a bracha from the Kaddish Baruch Hu, forgetfulness anyway, so that you could learn.
You can learn again, yeah.
So I have a great bracha in that respect.
Okay. The Baal Shem Tov says, Hagalut nimshechet b'shechecha. Uvezikaron sod hagi'ula. That's a good quote. Okay, so it's the case of the of Yibum. It's Parshat Matot, you know.
Here
in Eretz Yisrael, it's Matot. So it's the Shabbos of Nedarim. Shomeret Yavam is a woman whose husband dies without children, and so she needs either Yibum or Chalitza. The minute that the husband dies, a relationship is formed between her and her brother-in-law.
Or brothers-in-law.
That relationship is tantamount in some ways to
Erusin.
So Shemeret Yavam, remember a woman who needs Yibum, it's not because she doesn't have children, it's because her husband didn't have children. So if a husband had children from a first marriage and then remarries, and the second marriage doesn't produce children and the husband dies, the children from the first marriage are enough to be poter her. She doesn't require Yibum or Chalitza.
Makes sense. I never really thought of that.
Well,
right.
So conversely, if she had children from the first marriage, he doesn't have children, so
she doesn't. Yeah, because despite some attempt to spin the rather, I mean, it seems bizarre to us because it's unusual. I'll come back to that in a second. It seems bizarre to us because it's unusual. We don't encounter, no one in living memory has encountered Yibum, and most of us have never encountered Chalitza. But
a bit more frequency, though.
Relatively speaking, but it's still rather rare. I mean, I mentioned to you last time we met that I got involved with this situation, a woman who does need chalitza, and it's a rather complicated story. It might be, you know, like the first time in Jewish history that all of these situations have aligned to create this case. This woman is a Gioret. She converted to marry her husband. She had a reform conversion. Over the years, they were chozrim b'tshuva, she and her Jewishly born husband, they became Orthodox. She had an Orthodox conversion, and they had an Orthodox chuppah v'kiddushin. Unfortunately, and then they came on aliyah. Unfortunately, the husband got cancer and passed away, and they never had children. He had, however, been married previously. That marriage produced a son. That first marriage was an intermarriage. The son is not Jewish. Even though he remained involved in the boy's life, and the second wife was involved in the boy's life. So this is just a bizarre alignment of circumstances, I assume, I mean, the Gemara discusses such a case of somebody that had been molied an Eino Yehudi, somebody who has non-Jewish issue, which is not poter the Jewish wife from her need for chalitza.
Is the non-Jewish issue not in line for inheritance?
No, it's not.
Doesn't exist.
But this all underlines the point that chalitza nibum is not because of this idea that we have to take care of the wife,
right,
which is sometimes the way it's spun. Right, you know, this idea that, like, in those days, a young widow who became a woman who needed chalitza. Generally speaking, it was a young woman because they didn't yet have children. It doesn't have to be, of course. So it takes care. But that's, you know, the facts do not support that very nice way of spinning it. Because if he had children from previous marriage, so she would not have even chalitza. A husband has two wives, three wives, none of which produce children. Only one of them needs chalitza or yibum, and that releases the other ones. Right? So it's really about this, the way the Ramban describes it, of, you know, creating a way or sealing off the potential of continuing that line through the brother. And you understand that although it's not a it never became a mainstream Jewish idea, reincarnation, but you understand why the Ramban, influenced as he was by Kabbalah, understood that there's an element of reincarnation involved here, in that the children become the children of the dead brother,
and also be the inheritor of the dead brother.
Right.
Which is, I guess, the point.
By the way, in that case, did he have a brother?
Yes, in this case I'm talking about. Yeah, he has a brother, and the woman is going off to Chutz Laaretz to have the chalitza sometime in the near future. But, the brother's not religious, but I think the brother himself might be intermarried. But he's, you know, so they explain to him the situation, and he's willing to help. I don't know exactly. You know, you can go on the YouTube. You can watch Tekes Chalitza. You know, that they must have videoed it some recently. What?
There were.
Yibum was still practiced, but I don't know. Today, that's not the case. No. So, I mean, in the Gemara already has this idea that we've phased out Yibum. So, Shemeret Yavam, Bein Le Yavam Echad, Bein Le Shnei Yavmin, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yafir. It's a three-way machlokas. So, in this period, you know, which is kind of tantamount to Nara Murasa. So, Rabbi, what?
Why Naram
Rusa? And it's because Naram Rusa is this case where the whole perek has been discussing this case of the husband before they're married having some rights in joint with the father, but here the relationship immediately. Who had rights before the second before Reuven died? Reuven had rights over his wife's nedar. This girl is not the Shomeret Yavam is not a Nara. She's a full grown adult. The second he dies, not in loco parentis, in loco, how do you say husband in Latin? Viris, in loco virus. I think that's right, if I remember my Latin. I think in Latin, vi, like from viral. Which is like husband is also in this sense, like animal husbandry. So in loco of the husband, in place of the husband, the brother Shimon steps in immediately, and Rabbi Eliezer seems to be saying what? Rabbi Eliezer says that the Yavam can be made for the nedarim, just like the husband.
Right, but I think what your question is, why Dafka Naram Musab?
Like said it right. I'm saying this is why Naram. This is why the parak, this is why it's here in this parak.
Well, in the previous Mishnah, we're talking about
Bogeret Shayud Bechot. Right, you'll see that's going.
And that wasn't specific in the Ramah.
That's going to come back. In other words, the Yavam takes over certain responsibilities for the for the husband, and therefore presumably Rabbi Eliezer is saying has the rights over the Hafarat Nedarim,
which he also said in the last Mishnah.
Correct. He did. Hoilu balachai b'mizanoteh hayafir.
Same restrictions would apply here also. The giver of chodesh and the chodesh.
No, in other words, this would be immediately.
But the same.
There, yud bet chodesh. After yud bet chodesh, that's the previous sukkah. After yud bet chodesh, the husband, the arus takes on certain responsibilities for her upkeep, and in his position is. In return for those financial responsibilities, he has entitlement over Nadar. Here, the relationship begins immediately with the death of the Yevamav.
I think you can conclude from this, at least from Rabbi Ezer's, if you want to make some hikish between Rabbi Ezer here and Rabbi Ezer, and it would make sense that he would have full obligations to her. And it makes sense logically.
Yes.
Once the woman can't be married to anyone else, you can't leave her hanging out to dry. She has no one else to go to.
Right. Exactly.
Well, would this mean that all of the financial assets go to the brother too?
Yeah. In all cases, he's the brother inherits. In the absence of children, the brother inherits.
Right. But if they're more than one brother, so what happens?
Well, so they're mechalek. So let's imagine. So Rabbi Eliezer says, so he can be mefir. Rabbi Yoshua Omer leechad, aval lo leshnai. In a simple case, when you have Reuven and Shimon, so Reuven dies, it's obvious that Shimon now has this responsibility and presumably should have those obligations. But what if there's Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda? So it's not clear that one of them has to do it. Any one of them has to do it. It's not even clear that the eldest, the responsibility should fall on him, although presumably that was the minhag. That was the minhag. Right? That the eldest should do it. But since the responsibility doesn't fall on any one of them, so who should have the rights over the Hafarat Nedarim? So since it's not obvious that any one of them should have the right, so then none of them, says Rabbi Yoshua, has this middle position.
So could we, that if, I mean, again, I might be projecting, but I think that maybe the difference between Rabbi Yezid and Rabbi Yoshua is that the other things that the, as in the previous question, that has to do with your financial obligation to. Here, it might be a different issue. It might be not a financial obligation, but the Nidareen have effect on the potential husband. So if you're not going to be that husband, you have no right to say that she can't do this because you might not be married to her in any case.
You want to say something?
Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of what you had mentioned before, saying that the dollar is based off of because of the financial obligation of the husband. So let's say there's only one brother, and if it was the case that he was going to get it, until he knows what those financial obligations are, how can he deal with you're saying if it's immediate, how can you?
No, in other words, it doesn't matter what the financial obligations are. Those the Torah puts those obligations on the brother-in-law, on the surviving brother.
Regardless
of what he knows, what he doesn't know. But presumably it's not, the knowledge of the financial obligations isn't a number. It's just the idea that now he has to care for this woman as if she were his wife. Or in theory, she has to become his wife.
New debts as well.
Right? So
I'm just trying to think of this, until he knows that. I guess that goes to the point.
He doesn't have to know anything. These obligations, these rights transfer automatically. Let's take a more normal case of parents.
Yep.
Somebody's an only child. His parents die. All of their assets transfer to him automatically. He doesn't need to know how much the estate is worth. Those assets transfer to him automatically.
So what I was referring to is if she made another that now is incumbent on the financials that he is not yet aware of,
the rights of the husband under normal circumstances to be made for his wife's nidarim have serious limitations on them, time limitations,
yeah, yeah.
Other things. But
he definitely has to know about the neder.
He has to know what the nedarim are. It's all the same dinim of any other case. He'd have to know what the neder is. He needs to have heard it. He needs to have canceled it on the day that he heard it. But if we presume that David is correct in Rabbi Eliezer's position that the transference of the rights to hafarat nedarim comes with the transference of the financial obligation he now has imposed on him to take care of the widow, the Shomer Yavam, so then that these things transfer automatically. Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo le'echad velo le'shnayim. No. The case of the Shomer Yavam is not like a wife. She's not like a wife, and he doesn't have the rights to... Like the Chachamim in the previous sugya. Right? The Chachamim say there is such a case after 12 months, she wants to already go to the chuppah, and he's dragging his feet, and you know he can't keep her waiting without supporting her, so he has to support her. But until they come out of the chuppah, he has no rights over her nedarim. And apparently Rabbi Akiva agrees with that here, and says that even though here the Torah creates this obligation between brother-in-law and sister-in-law, or between Yavam and Shomeret Yavam, that has nothing to do with Nadar. It's Feidinim. So Omer Rabbi Elazar, Ma im Isha Shekanahu la'atzmo harehu mefer nidareha. So now the Mishnah, it tries to explain the rationale behind each position. So Rabbi Elazar, who kind of gives this absolute right to the Yavam or to the set of brothers, so he says, listen, if a man goes out and marries a woman, the Torah gives him those rights of Hafar Adar. Kal v'chomer, who's the Shadchan here? Maybe the Malach HaMavis. But the Malach HaMavis is working as the Shadchan on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The same situation. Because look at the previous Mishnah. So he doesn't have rights until, after say 12 months. And then he assumes financial obligations.
Right.
Here, let's say there has to be this interim period. Whether they
No. So exactly. So maybe Rabbi Eliezer is saying, it doesn't matter. That decision of whether Yibam or Chalitza is independent of the fact that the what's called the Zika, the mystic connection between the man and the woman, is created. And Rabbi Eliezer is saying that Zika, what, think of it, a continuum, right? There's Erusin and there's Nisuin. Where do we put the marker, according to Rabbi Eliezer? It's much closer to Nisuin. This is Erusin plus. Right? This is much because he has rights that a regular Arus does not have, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that the Yavam has rights that the... That an Arus does not have.
An Arus before 12 months.
An Arus before 12 months, right. So Rabbi Eliezer says this is from a Kal V'chomer. Here the Torah creates that relationship from the get-go. So Kal V'chomer should have the rights over the Hafar Nadarim. Isha Shekinah Shemayim Eino Din Shiafrin Dereo? Question mark explanation. So Omer Lo Rabbi Akiva Lo Ema Marta Be'isha Shekinah Hula Atzmo She'ein La'acherim Barishut. So in a normal case, Reuven is Mekadesh Sarah, or Rivka, or Leah, or any one of those names. So the second that he is Mekadesh the woman, nobody else can be Mekadesh her. Nobody else can do anything that will shter that shidduch. Right? He can divorce her, but nobody else has any authority to get involved in this relationship which has been created. Right? The second he puts the ring on the finger, says Hariat Mekudeshet Li, that mystical bond, the mystical chain of connection, links the two of them together. until death do them part, or a get. But that's not true about the Shomer et Yavam. Even though the Shomer et Yavam was connected to her brother-in-law by Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chvod avatzmo. How? Im lo mad bish kana hu atzmo she'en lacherim barashut tomar b'isha shehiknu lo min ha-shamayim she'esh lacherim barashut. How? The other brothers. Right? In other words, the brother dies, leaving behind a whole pack of brothers. So the oldest brother says, you know what? I'm going to fulfill my responsibility, and I will do Yibum, or I will do Chalitza with her. In the middle of the night, the youngest brother comes and jumps the gun, and he marries her. Right? Which could not be the case if Reuven is Mekadesh Rivka before the chuppah, before the nesuin. Nobody else can come along and be Mekadesh her. It's in some ways it's less, and it depends on how you look at it, right? It depends, but in theory, right? In other words, since by definition, if Reuven and Leah are the only two people in the world after some apocalypse, and he's Mekadesh her, nobody else can do anything. But nobody else could do anything beforehand. But in theory, the nature, it's how you look at the nature of the relationship.
Yibum is not, or Shomer Yibum is not...
it's not inherently exclusive. It's not inherently exclusive. Even though in this particular case, it could be there was only one brother. Right? Mashalamada Verdome, Rabbi Soloveitchik had that famous vort about why avelus for parents is why avail. No, it's not. It's not. It was Moshe Feinstein. I'm trying to remember the story. No, I'm sorry. It was Rav Hutner. Is this story when the Rav Hutner? There's a story about when the Rav was sitting. You know, the Rav sat shiva. There was that in 67. The Rav sat shiva three times in a row for his mother, his brother, and his wife. And Rabbi Yosef Blau told me that he was there at one of the shivas. And he was there with his father-in-law, the elder Rav Tait, Zichrono Levracha, Rav Hutner, and the Rav at this shiva for the Rav in Boston. I think in Boston. And maybe it wasn't in Boston. Maybe it was the Rav's mother. They sat shiva in New York. I don't know. Anyway, lo chashuv. So Eichshu, this question of like why Avelis for parents is Yud Bet Chodesh, but for all the other relatives, it's only 30 days. So each of them, Rav Teitz, Rav Hutner, and the Rav, gave a different explanation. And the explanation that they each gave said more about them than it said about the sugya. So I don't remember whether it was Rav Teitz or Rav Hutner. I think it was Rav Teitz who said it has something to do with the exclusivity of the relationship. A person loses his wife, Rachamon Letzlan, you can remarry. A person loses a sibling, right? So, you know, maybe you're 60 years old and your sibling was 70 years old and it was your only sibling. You're not going to get another sibling. But there's nothing inherent in the sibling relationship that makes it exclusive. Could be you were an only child. Could be you only had one sibling. But it could be you also came from the Brady Bunch. Right? Everybody understands that it's not inherent in the sibling relationship that you only have one. Even Rachman is not with children. Right? Many people only have one child. Exactly. No, but even without the Tekadar Ben Gershom, and even with the Tekadar Ben Gershom, you can remarry. You can remarry. But parents, you can't replace it. It's so you're mourning that irreplaceable, the unique relationship, right? Now, for many people never remarry. Many people only have one sibling. Many people have only one child. Right? But it's not inherent in the nature of the relationship. That's Rabbi Akiva's point about about the Yavam. Even though it could be there's only one Yavam. But it's not inherent, which is different than an Arus. Once Reuven is the Arus of Leah, there can't be any other Arus. Nobody else can come in and jump in line.
In this, I mean, it's not your moment here, but just I wonder. I imagine they do with this there. If this woman is Shomeret Yavam, and then the parents of Reuven have another kid, did he suddenly become?
Say again, the parents.
Reuven dies.
Yeah.
And then right. Reuven dies.
A brother is born. Yeah. So this is one of the sugyot in Yavamot. I believe that child is not shayach for. I believe. I'd like to say it's been a long time since I learned Yavamos, but I've never really learned Yavamos properly.
In some ways, because there's cases where if the brother is not capable of doing even more something, so then the woman's stuck.
Right.
If a brother was born, then maybe you'd be able to wait if even met to wait a little while.
So I think not. I think that I think he had to be ba'olam in order for the zikah to have snatched onto him the second that the brother left the world.
What happens where the brother dies and his brother is 1 year old?
Right. So she has to wait.
She has to wait.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and there are tragic stories of, all types of things.
And he could take place.
Yeah, yeah.
That has to be.
No, this is a story. Shlomo Aviner tells a story. Way back when in Europe, there was a cholera broke out or whatever it was. And lots of people died. So there was a young Chosin and Kala, whatever, maybe she was 17 years old, he was 18 years old. He got the cholera and he died. So she's 17 years old. She needs now, they didn't have children, they were newlyweds. So she needs chalitza. The dead husband had one brother, and that brother was unfortunately mentally impaired and was not fit to perform chalitza, even though she's now bound to him. She's 17 years old. She's stuck for the rest of her life. It's like being an aguna. So she runs to the Rav and the Rav of the town and in Europe and says, what am I supposed to do? So the Rav, who himself had just gotten up from Shiva because his wife had died from the cholera, says, don't worry, it'll all work out. She says, what do you mean it'll all work out? I'm 17 years old. So he says, when I say it'll all work out, that means it'll all work out. What happened? The brother, he got the cholera and he died. The old parents, the Zaken and the Skena, these two dead boys, come complaining to their... Oh, and the Rav married the girl. She was a widow, he was a widower, they got married.
Is this a short story that really happened?
Rav Shlomo Aviner tells the story. The parents of these two dead boys come complaining to the Rav. Ratzachta v'gam yirashta, right? And you put the hex, right? Well, who's going to take care of us? We're old people in our old age. So he says, don't worry, it'll all work. What are we doing? So they think the house is going to fall on them. What happened? This old Zaken and his old Skena had a Ben Zkunim. And that Ben Zkunim was, I think he says, the grandfather of Reb Tzin Aviner. I think that's the way he tells the story. I mean, I heard him tell this story once. It's like a remarkable, remarkable story. But I mention it because this could happen. You could have a zikah with a yavam who is not available, or the story that I mentioned last time, which is the kind of behind the ending of Agnon's Tmol Shel Shom. She becomes a widow. There's a brother, but she's in Yerushalayim. It's 1910. The brother is off in Galicia. She's not going there. He's not coming here. It's a bad situation. Oh, yeah?
I love you, Rosa.
What's it called?
I love you, Rosa.
I love you.
That same story takes place in Shalai.
Rosa is from Casablanca.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Rosa, 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 Atahuva Sheli. Oh, yeah? I know it from it's Yerem Gaon in Casablanca.
Okay, the movie.
Maybe it's also.
The original movie was made in the late 60s. It takes place in Yerushalayim at the end of the 19th century. A woman becomes a widow, and the only available son at that point was an unmarried wife. He was an unmarried son. The movie had a problem because there were some unmarried brothers, I guess, that could have been a young son. He's 7 years old. Eventually, he runs off to Spain, and communicates with his friend for him.
Mm-hmm. 35
years ago,
however. So, that's Rabbi Akiva's position. So, Omer le Rabbi Yoshua, Akiva, Dvarcha b'shnei yavmin, ma ta mashiv al yavam echad. The question we asked, it makes sense, the logic makes sense if there's two brothers and therefore no one person has the exclusive rights, but what if there's only one brother? So Rabbi Akiva says something else. Not exactly what we said. He says, Omar lo, Ein hayavma gmura liyavam kishem sharusa gmura liisha. En achinami. The relationship between the man and the woman is not parallel to husband and wife. And therefore, I just do not accept the idea that the Yavam has the rights over her Nadarim. Just like in the previous sugya, where he says, until you come out of the chuppah, it doesn't matter how much financial obligation you have, doesn't matter how long you've been engaged, doesn't matter. Until the chuppah, you don't have those rights.
Yeah. So Rashi gives a... Rashi, I think, gives a... He gives an explanation. Rashi gives an explanation of what that means.
So read it.
She'im ba'al le'azar ein niskal. She'im ba'al lo dina usa v'lo dina shenish. Ve'im chevin alea ela lav delo...
The lotia eshet amen. Right. It's there are other examples that underline the fact that she is not an eshes ish, that this is not parallel, and therefore this is one of the things that don't connect. Husbands and wives have certain rights that they have with each other, right? A yavam can't be intimate with the shomeret yavam until they have. Well, until they have Yibum. Right? Until they have Yibum.
You can't have it after Yibum either.
What? What?
There's no
tekes this, you don't have a chuppah. The Yibum is the marital relations itself done for the purpose of L'shem Yibum. Just like we know that Mikara Torah Aisha Niknate be Kesef Shtar Bia, right? We don't do Bia, right? For all the reasons that the Gemara says. But in a chinami, in other words, this is a case where the only way to affect the Yibum is through the Bia, which is through the sexual relations, which actually then underscores, you know, that point that is the purpose
so
of
actually,
it.
Okay, I guess they don't have Yibum anymore, but they didn't have any, even when they did, in societies that had Yibum, they didn't have any chuppah, right?
No, so there was no chuppah. But we'll see in a second that Chazal created a kind of dirabonim, an intermediate stage, because they thought this is not so, it doesn't look so right.
Right?
So, so now the Gemara, now that we spent all this time reviewing everything we did in the last year. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishlama Rabbi Akiva Savar Ein Zika. Rabbi Akiva says that there is no Zika, that this relationship is not immediately formed. Meaning, even this is a little tricky because everybody uses this term Zika. Zika literally, not the virus. Zika means the relationship between the widow and her brother-in-law. What Rabbi Akiva is really saying is that Zika, that connection, which is formed as soon as the husband dies, is not tantamount to marriage. So Rabbi Akiva says, Ein Zika. V'Rabbi Yoshua Savar Yesh Zika. Ela Rabbi Eliezer, my ta'amai. Why does Rabbi Eliezer say in all cases in all cases the husbands have the rights? Because how do you say there's a Zika? So you could say she has a Zika. She's married to three guys?
Right.
Right?
If he said there's no zikah, then he'd be like Rabbi Akiva. If he said there is zikah, then he'd be Rabbi Yeshua. Right. So where does he fit in the no zikah?
Right, unless you want to say, as Rabbi Eliezer, and as the idea that the Yavam can be Mayfair is,
don't know what you're asking.
Works if there's a Zikah. But what kind of Zikah? Because they are Ki'ilu married. He is Ki'ilu her husband. Rabbi Akiva says he is not Ki'ilu her husband. Rabbi Yehoshua says he is Ki'ilu her husband. So Beseder, Rabbi Eliezer, who says any of the brothers. So how does that work? They're all Ki'ilu, her husband? That's an idea that seems rather foreign to our sense of marriage. So, Iyesh Zika for Rabbi Eliezer, if he holds there is a Zika, Ein Breira. So we have a problem. Because we say Ein Breira, not Ein Breira, the motto of the army. There's no choice. How is it Ben Gurion? How is it you won the war? What was the answer? Ein Breira. What's the choice? Losing the war is not an option. So we had to win the war. That's not what this is talking about. Breira is a sugya all over Shas. Breira means retroactive selection. It is a machlokas in the Gemara. It's a machlokas in the Rishonim. Even to the opinion that says Yesh Breira, in certain circumstances, we say that you can take an act and that affects retroactively something that had happened in the past for halachic purposes. So even to the opinion that says there is such retroactivity, it's not clear in which cases. So the idea of Breira, like the classic case of Breira, is with Eruv Tchumen. A person's allowed to make an Eruv. In other words, Tchum means, you know, you have 2,000 Amot around your city. In modern day, it's a little more complicated because we don't live in cities like that. But around, you're allowed to leave the city limits only for 2,000 Amot. Right? Imagine the days when the Yerushalayim, Lifnim Min HaChoma, was the whole Yerushalayim.
We have 7
In summer, yeah. In summer camps, you could have such a thing. There's a gate around the camp.
And after that,
it depends on where the camp is. But in the days when Yerushalayim Atika was the whole Yerushalayim, which was not so long ago. I mean, I'm not talking about in the year 70 CE. What year was the 1860s?
Yeah.
Yemid Moshe was founded in the 1860s. So in 1850, Yerushalayim Atika was Yerushalayim. You could leave Shar Yafo and travel 2,000 Amot. And presumably there was a marker that said Ad Kan Tchum Shabbat. But we have an idea called Erev Tchumen, that if you put a marker down, typically a challah, matzah, mashu kazeh, you can extend your 2,000 Amot, but you get one get out of jail, get one get out of Tchum free card. Right? So let's say you have to travel on Shabbat further than the Tchum Shabbat because maybe somebody's coming and you want to be there to greet them as they arrive. But you don't know if they're coming from the east or they're coming from the west. So you can put on Erev Shabbat an Erev Tchumen, one in the east and one in the west. Shabbos morning, you wake up and you get the message, they're coming from the east. We say, Yesh Breira. The one in the east is the Erev Tchumen, and the one on the west was bird food. Right? That is an example of Breira at work.
Oh, when you say the one extension, in other words, the one extension.
Right. In other words, you can
4,000 amot. Right.
But not 4,000 amot in every direction. You could do 2,000 amot in this direction.
Yeah. No. In other words, you get 2,000 amot on the house. That's called Tchum Shabbat.
But you can only do one.
If you put an Erev Tchumen at the limit of those 2,000 amot, so now you can go 4,000 amot from the city limits. Right.
Right. But you can't at the same time put one at the eastern limit and one at the western limit.
Right.
Except with this concept.
Because we say, Breira, that as you're saying, I'm making one one Eruv, which means, by definition, this is not like a suffix kind of thing. You know, like we have this idea, we don't do it so much because we don't like to daven extra. But, you know, there's this idea that if you're not sure if you have to daven again, you forgot Yalla V'Yavo and Rosh Chodesh, or Bechlal, you don't remember, oi, did I daven Mincha today or didn't I daven Mincha today? It's 2 minutes before Shkia. How could anybody forget whether they daven Mincha? I mean, it's like saying, I forgot, do I have, you know, two kids or do I have three kids? Right? So how could you imagine, Rachmanis, in these days?
I didn't answer it, but I forgot what it was.
No, I didn't mean it's been done to not know what it is. It's been done to forget where you're.
Yeah, I'm saying that. Like, how could it be somebody you forgot where you daven mincha? So the halacha is, you should daven again with a t'nai. That if I didn't daven mincha, this is my mincha, and if I did daven mincha, this is a tefillat nedava, which is in theory something you could do all the time, right? Three tefillot a day is the minimum. Since we are not so great at generating kavana. Horaya, you forgot whether you davened in the first place or not. Since we're not so great at generating kavana, so the Chachamim said, the rabbi said, it's better not to do tefillot nedava because it's just going to be another three strikes you're out. But the concept exists and it can be employed with a tnai in case you. Right? That's not brera, right? That's a tnai, right? Breira means you take an act which is undefined, and then some subsequent act or some subsequent act of kavana or designation retroactively says, because you can't make the Erev Tchumen on Shabbat, right? It has to then be before Shabbat. When you do it before Shabbat, you're saying one of these is the Erev Tchumen, the other will end up being nothing. Right, that's the case of Breira.
Is this also a factor in halachic prenup, the concept of Breira?
What did you say?
Halachic prenup.
You could say, like, if I did this.
No. That's not Breira. That's that's a contract. If you and I have a contract. I say, I'm going to come and cater your bar mitzvah. If I flake out and don't show up at your bar mitzvah, I'm going to owe you a lot of money. Right? That's a
kind of like annulment of the thing in the first place.
No, that works under, I think that works under the concept of, I'm not such a bucky in this. I think that works under this concept of hafkaat kedushin. But that's not what the halachic prenups do not, that's not what how they work. The halachic prenups that are in use today work on, it's a financial obligation. It's a contract. It's contract law, right? You say, if A, B, or C happen in this marriage, as determined by the bet din that we now agree on, so then I, the husband, have to give a get, and if I don't give a get, I'm liable to the following financial penalties. But that's not brera. That's you know, there's a tripwire that's put in to the contract that if the conditions are met, then obligations, you know, will impose themselves, having been accepted. In advance.
I think the Breira would work for Mincha.
It's not Breira by Mincha.
No, I'm saying it would work in this case if you come to Ma'ariv and say, wait, I didn't have Mincha. So you're going to daven another Shmoneh Esrei after Ma'ariv. You say, well, if I daven Mincha, so this would be Tefillat Nedava. If I didn't have Mincha, this would be Tashlim for Mincha.
No, but that's not Breira either.
No, because it's after.
You can't do Breira in advance. The very fact that you're making that statement, I'm about to daven mincha, I'm about to daven tashlumin. If it's this, it's that. If it's the other thing, it's something else. Mm-hmm. That breira is you do an act, and then some subsequent event will determine what the reality of that prior act was. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the case that you gave by mincha is that's called a tznai. Mm-hmm. Right? You do a conditional act. Reira is a retroactive act. So they said Rabbi Elazar Beseder. But there's no Reira. In other words, one of these guys, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, the three brothers of the dead Reuven, one of them is going to become either the Choletz or the Yavam. Right? But before they do the act, we don't know which one it is. So Bishma, Omar, Rabbi Amar, Kigon Shasabah, Yesh Zika, Ein Brer. So Omar, Omar, Rabbi Ami, Kigon Shasabah Ma'amar. Rabbi Eliezer Savar La Kebet Shammai, the Omre Ma'amar Kone Kinyan Gamur. What's Ma'amar? Ma'amar is the nickname for what a takana of Chazal. Chazal understood what happens. Reuven dies, Shimon now is connected to Leah. Forget, think he's the only brother. Or Reuven dies and Shimon, amongst Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, decides that Shimon is going to be the one to do it. So what does he have to do? So in the days of Chalitza, for Chalitza you'd go and you do Chalitza. In the days of Yibum, what would you do? They would have sexual relations. And there would be Edom outside the door. Chazal did not, for the same reasons that Chazal got rid of Bia, you know, as a form of Kiddushin in the regular way. Of course, it's pritzistic, it's not proper, it's not everybody can generate the proper kavanot when such an act is involved. But the problem here is that min haTorah, that's the definition of Yibum. It's not like you have a choice of A, B, or C. You can't get rid of it. It's the definition of the act. So they said, Dirabonon, we're going to create something called Ma'amar. What's Ma'amar? It looks a lot like Kiddushin. You say, Hare at mikudeshet li bezikat yavmin. And you'd give her a kesef or a shtar. Right? It was a little more official, right? So that when they did the Yibum, everybody understood there was already this Ki'ilu Erusin, right? So Rabbi Eliezer says, Enochinami. Rami says that Rabbi Eliezer would say, Enochinami, there is no Breira. When there's more than one brother, we can't know retroactively which one was going to do the Yibum, so how can we let any of them do Hafarat Nedarim? So he says, but it's after Ma'amar. The brother would die. They'd sit Shiva, I guess. And after the Shiva, he would do Ma'amar. They would have this little tekes to determine that they were going to go ahead with the Yibum. Or, you know, to know which of the three brothers was going to step up.
So then if that's the case, then actually Rabbi Eliezer is even less, has a less wide scope than Rabbi Yehoshua.
Because
Rabbi Yeshua says if there's one brother, right away you can do it.
Oh.
And here Rabbi Eliezer says, doesn't matter how many brothers there are, until one sets up, and even one brother could do it. And it's only until the Uba Mama, which happens later.
Correct. Well, maybe this is in Havamin. Aval b'shnei yavmin. I'm sorry, I skipped. Rabbi Yehoshua omer lecha hani mili b'chad yavam. Aval b'shnei yavmin lo. Mi ikamidi dechiati achohi asar aleha bevia o begita umefer. How could it be? I mean, this is what we said in Mishnah. So Rabbi Yehoshua says, Enochinami. So how could it be that one brother will jump the gun and release her, and the other one has the right to be mefer? That's why Rabbi Yehoshua says, if there's only one brother, he has those rights. But if there's more than one brother, you don't have the exclusivity, and therefore that's it. Rabbi Akiva Savar Ein Zika. And Rabbi Akiva says Bechal Ein Zika. The Rabbi Eliezer de Omar Ma'amar Levet Shammai, who holds that Ma'amar is like a real Kinyan Gamur, which is why he should have those rights. Ein Kone Ela Lidachot Bitsara. Mai Ikala Meimar. So what does it mean? What does it mean? What does the Ma'amar accomplish? According to Rabbi Eliezer, what does the Ma'amar establish? It establishes that it lets the co-wife off the hook. Poor Reuven died. He had two wives. Neither of them had children. He had no children from either of them or from anyone else. So there's three brothers. Only one of them needs only one of them needs chalitza or yibum. So let's say there's one brother. So he has to, this is like a, it's like a bizarre beauty contest. You're sitting there at the shiva, right? Who's sitting shiva? The brother and the two, and the, no, the two almanot.
Two almanot.
And what's the brother have to decide?
Oh, now we're asking.
Which one do I want to do yibum with? What? The second he does ma'amar with Rivka, Leah's off the hook. She needs no chalitza, she needs yivum. She can go and get remarried. What? That's what Rabbi Eliezer says.
That's interesting that the Rabbanan could basically mafkir the, you know, she's like an Eshadish still.
No,
left.
Because
no, before the ma'amar, she's an Eshadish.
Before the ma'amar, she's, well, she's not like an Eshadish. She's like a shomeret yavam.
But she has, she's
a certain way we look at it.
Mina Torah, she has restrictions. No,
she has absolutely, she has restrictions.
So it's interesting that the ma'amar, which is the rabbanan, could somehow cancel out the Torah level restrictions until
yafeh, okay. Because Beit Shammai says that the ma'amar, even though the Torah does not. Even though the Torah did not require it, because Minat Torah, unlike marriage, which is a two-step process, Yibum is a one-step process, right? I mean, it's really a two-step process. The first process is Reuven dies. The second process is the Shimon does the Yibum, right? But in terms of what the people are involved in making happen, it's a one-step process.
So once he does Ma'amar,
so Beis Shammai says, and apparently Rabbi Eliezer passes like Beis Shammai in this regard, that once he does Ma'amar, even though that's not required min haTorah, it's enough to generate a kinyan gamur to be mafkia the rival wife, the second wife, from her need to get Ibn Mukhalis.
And if he wanted to back out, only
so once he'd done a Kenyan, so then he has to give a get.
Not Chalitza?
I don't know. So then he has to do Chalitza. Chalitza is like the path of get for, right? That's Chalitza is like a divorce. Right? What a get accomplishes in a normal marriage, the Chalitza accomplishes in...
You're saying his ma'amar is akin to being married,
right?
So then you probably need to get not chalitza.
No, but I'm not sure because, in other words, no. I think you need chalitza because chalitza in this relationship, the way out is either chalitza or yibum. My ikala meimar hocha b'maya skinam kigon she amad bedin v'itchayev lamizonot. Because Rav Pinchos mishmei the Rava, the Omar kol hanoderet al dat ba'ala hinoderet. Right? Period. In other words, it's what is it like? It's like he goes into. It's like the previous sugya. He's in the bezdin. The bezdin is mechayev him in her mezonot because he hadn't. Stepped up within 12 months. Once he's chayv and mezonot, so then he has those rights over the nedarim. All right, we'll continue. So next week, if you'll be here next week.